Good afternoon. The Education Committee will come to order. It is Wednesday, March 12th. Before we call the roll, well, we'll call the roll. Ann, please call the roll.
Chair O'Toole.
Here.
Vice Chair Porter.
Here.
Ranking Member Reed.
Here.
Representative Atkins.
Here.
Bielecka.
Here.
Coley.
Here.
Danish.
Here.
Diaz.
Here.
Forward.
Here.
Hudson.
Here.
McBurney.
Here.
Nunez.
Here.
Perry.
Here.
Peters.
Here.
Saunders.
Here.
Stafford.
Here.
Torres.
Here.
Zimmerman.
Here.
We have a quorum. Thank you. Members, I'd like to take a moment of privilege before we begin to introduce some 67 students from Land O'Lakes, Florida, from the school called Imagine. Please stand and be recognized. Thank you for being here. Members, we have four bills to hear today, and the first one we're going to take up is PCB 14-02, School Accountability. Representative Atkins, you have two amendments on that bill. You are free to go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment 1 allows an IEP team with parental consent to determine if the student has a medical complexity that the student should not be assessed. The team must base its determination upon compelling medical documentation from a licensed physician that the student is a student with a medical complexity and is incapable of being tested. The superintendent of schools must review and approve or disapprove the IEP team's recommendation. The district school superintendent must report to the school board and the Department of Education the number of students each year not tested as a result of this provision. And that's the amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the amendment? Are there any appearance cards on the amendment? None on the desk. Is there debate on the amendment? There was an appearance card. Is that right? Amendment 1, appearance card by Scott Howard, Senior Executive of Government Relations from Orlando. Thank you very much. Orange County waves in support. Is there debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative Atkins, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave close.
All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Yay.
All opposed, say nay. Amendment passes. You're recognized to do Amendment 2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment is clarifying and provides the district school superintendent is to allow instructional personnel the opportunity to review their class rosters for accuracy and to correct any mistakes in the classroom rosters. And that's the amendment.
Are there questions on the amendment? No questions on the amendment. Are there appearance cards on the amendment? Seeing no appearance card, is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Atkins, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
All in favor say yay.
Yay.
All opposed say no. Nay. Sound like a little donkey when I say nay. Nay. Oh. I'm sorry. Just slipped out. All right. We are now back on the PCB. 1402 is amended. Representative Atkins, please explain the PCB.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, on February 24th, Commissioner Stewart appeared before this committee to present a number of recommended changes to the school accountability and teacher evaluation systems. This PCB, in large part, incorporates her recommendations, which positions the state for a more stable transition during the implementation of a new statewide standardized assessment in the 2014-15 school year. The changes in this bill have already been discussed by this committee, so what you hear today should sound very familiar. So dealing with school grades, this bill simplifies school grade calculations for elementary, middle, and high schools. These calculations will focus more closely on student performance in the core subject areas of English, language arts, math, science, and social studies. In addition, the bill takes a common sense approach to how school grades are determined by basing the grade on the percentage of total points earned by the school. This is analogous to the way grades are calculated in the classroom. To maintain integrity of the school grade calculations, the bill requires the State Board to periodically review the school grading scale to determine if the scale should be adjusted upward to meet raised expectations and foster increased student performance. In addition, the bill prohibits the addition of extra weight to any school grade calculation component and disallows any provision that would raise or lower a school's grade beyond the percentage of points earned. The bill eliminates redundant reporting requirements for the commissioner and bolsters the content of school report cards by requiring each school report card to include student performance in English language arts, math, science, and social studies. In addition, the proposed calculation for high school emphasizes student eligibility for college credit and a successful four-year graduation rate for all students. The bill defines the frequently used term learning gains, student performance, and achievement level to enhance clarity of school accountability and statewide assessment program provisions in law. Dealing with district grades, the bill requires DOE to develop a district report card for purposes of reporting a district's grade. In addition to the district grade, the district report card must report the district's progress in achieving in closing achievement gaps, progress in demonstrating learning gains of its highest performing students, success in improving student attendance, grade level promotion of students scoring achievement levels 1 and 2 on statewide standardized math and English language arts assessments, and performance in preparing students for transitions between elementary school to middle school and middle school to high school. The bill changes provisions for school improvement ratings to focus more closely on the performance of students at alternative schools and ESC centers. The bill amends the school improvement rating components for alternative schools and ESC centers to include the percentage of eligible students who make learning gains in English language arts and the percentage of eligible students who make learning gains in mathematics as measured by statewide standardized assessments. The school improvement rating will take into consideration only the performance of the student while the student is at the alternative school or ESC center. Beginning in 2016-2017, a school that does not meet the requirements for issuance of a school improvement rating and has not received a rating for the past two consecutive years must receive a rating for the current year based on all student learning gains for all grade levels at the schools over the 3 years. The bill also provides that if the alternative school or ESC center does not have the requisite learning gains data for at least 10 students in either the ELA or math component, then the rating must be calculated based on the percentage of points earned for both components. So dealing with the transition year, consistent with the commissioner's recommendations, the bill establishes a transition year to stabilize the effects of the implementation of new standardized statewide assessments in the 2014-15 year. Under the bill, a school may not be required to select and implement a turnaround option in the 2015-16 school year based on the school's 2014-15 grade or school improvement rating. Instead, the bill treats the 2014-15 school year as an informational baseline upon which school grades and educator performance will be based beginning in 2015-16. In addition, a charter school system or a school district designated as high performing may not lose its designation based on the 2014-15 school grades of any of the schools within the charter school system or school district. Furthermore, a school or virtual instruction program that receives the same or lower school grade or school improvement rating for the 2014-15 school year compared to the 2013-14 school year will not be subject to sanctions or penalties that would otherwise occur as a result of the 2014-15 school grade or improvement rating. The Florida School Recognition Program will continue to be implemented as otherwise provided by the GAA during the transition year. In line with the Commissioner's recommendations, the bill provides flexibility to districts and schools with respect to hard-to-assess subjects and courses, such as band and art, by authorizing district school boards to adopt teacher and principal-selected local assessments. As part of the transition to the new statewide standardized assessment, the bill retains school district authority to establish measurable learning targets for local assessment through the 2014-15 school year. To help stabilize the transition, the bill also authorizes school districts for the 2014-15 year only to establish their own performance standards for teacher evaluation ratings. Under the bill, districts that demonstrate outstanding progress toward educator effectiveness are eligible for bonus points as provided in the 2014-15 GAA. Outstanding progress can be demonstrated by implementing performance-based instructional personnel salaries and by the use of local assessment results in personnel evaluations when statewide standardized assessments are not administered. And then finally, members, there's a section that deals with Hillsborough County specifically. When the Student Success Act was signed into law in 2011, the bill exempted Hillsborough County School District from certain evaluation requirements because the district, through a grant program with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, had already implemented performance pay and teacher evaluation policies consistent with the provisions of the Act. So this bill eliminates the State Board rulemaking requirements and instead requires the Hillsborough District School Superintendent to attest in writing by October 1, 2014, and each year thereafter, that the criteria for annual approval established in the Student Success Act has been met. If the district fails to comply with this requirement, the State Board may revoke the exemption at a public hearing. These provisions are set to expire August 1, 2017. And Madam Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there any questions on the bill? Representative Danish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking over at lines 197 through 202, and it's defined in calculation of learning gains and learning growth towards achievement levels 3, 4, and 5. And I want to clarify some of this in some of the sections above to see if it's going to coordinate together. So what exactly is this going to mean?
You recognize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose of lines 197 through 201 is to make sure that we have adequate emphasis on those students who are already achieving at levels 3, 4, and 5 to make sure that while we have a lot of attention, and rightly so, to those students who are at levels 1 and 2, we also want to make sure that the students at 3, 4, and 5 are also, that their learning gains are being measured and are being calculated and the proper focus on them.
Follow
you recognize?
Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Then looking at it, because I'm going kind of back from there, we talk about what's happening there, but I'm assuming we're talking with level 1 and 2 because we're talking the percentage of eligible students in the lowest 25%. I guess the first part of the question for that, and that's in section H and G, would that include all the students who are at level 1 and 2?
Can you tell me what line number you're looking
at? I'm sorry, going back just before that, starting at line 181.
Okay, so I'm sorry, what was your question again?
Oh, I'm sorry, okay. Madam Chair?
Yeah,
right. Okay. What I'm looking at here, because we're not really referring to the we're referring in these in 197 to 201 to levels 3, 4, and 5, but we don't really address it in the sections going from 181 on to 195. We're referring to it instead of as level 1 and 2 students, we're referring it to the lowest 25%, and I'm curious, is that going to include all of the students in level 1 and 2?
You recognize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's a very good question. So what we've done in the 25% that you see on line 181, beginning there in paragraph G, that language is consistent with what we had looked at before with the lower 25% quartile. So we're keeping that language that's been in the school grades for quite some time now. We're keeping that, but then we're adding 197 to 201 to make sure that we're also looking at the other students. Now, does that encompass all the students in level 1 and 2? That's a mathematical question that could be different, quite frankly, at each school. The purpose here, though, for the grade is we're going to look at that lowest 25% quartile. That's going to factor into the 12 and into the grade, but also to know that those level 3, 4, and 5s are also quite important in determining learning gains.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm kind of hesitant on this part, then I'm kind of curious that we might want to look at this in addition, because what we're going to have there is a little possibly an area where we're going to have students that are on, you know, let's say level 2 probably, and maybe making gains in level 2, and we're not, and of course those students are students that aren't performing as well, and for them to make gains I think is very important, and we may want to look at that to make sure that they fit into the formula as well, that a school doesn't lose out credit on gains for students at the level 2 area.
You recognize.
And so if your question is, can we look at that?
Yeah, I'm sorry, yes.
then we can absolutely look at that. Like I said, the 25% lowest quartile is language that's been there, and so we're keeping that. But your point is well taken.
Thank you. We'll talk.
Thank you.
Questions? Representative Zimmerman, you recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Atkins, there's still nothing in here that would allow for any kind of, I hate to use the word bonus, but for lack of a better word, for 50-year graduates. Is that correct?
You recognize.
So if the question is, do we use the 5-year graduation rate in the grade, the answer with this proposal is no. We're simply looking at the 4-year graduation rate. And let me elaborate on that just a little bit. I know there's some that think we should look at the 4 and the 5-year, but quite frankly, for some of our schools in our urban core, when we look at the year 4 and the year 5, that sometimes is a double hit, a double negative to those school districts. Likewise, if you're looking at it from the school's perspective that lives, you know, in the suburban area, then that's a double plus. And so the whole purpose of this bill is to make sure that we take away all the smoke and mirrors. We take away the double pluses and the double minuses, and we just get to the basics, the core of the grade. And by doing that, by taking away all that smoke and mirrors, I believe then we can really begin to adequately assess and get a more accurate reflection of what's going on in our schools. Thank you for that question.
Any other questions? Representative Saunders, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, very much. And thank you, Chair Atkins, for your hard work on this. And I want to give a special thank you to our staff, too. The entire education staff team, I think, has been working hard on this. This is, as you and I shared in our meeting about this bill, is a huge bill. And it's got a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of stuff that's in here. And I think you've done a great job, and our whole team here has. I have a short series, Madam Chair, that's okay with you. And I'd like to start, Representative Atkins, with kind of a broad question, and maybe I'm just asking your opinion specifically, but we've heard a lot of feedback from a lot of different stakeholders in education in Florida that 1 year is important in this transition, but isn't enough time. And what we've heard in that argument, and most people have landed on 3 years, is important. We've heard about how important it is to field test and assessment. We've heard about technology in the classroom and the expectation that the new assessment will probably rely more heavily on technology. Can you just share, help maybe flesh that out. Why did we land on 1 year here and not the 3 years that have been asked for?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, and this is really a question, while it pertains to this bill, it's a question that I was often asked on the school board. And it's always a delicate balance. You're looking at, well, we can't do it that quickly. We need 4 or 5 years to get a strategic plan in place. Well, then you look around, and we've got students in the audience here today. And if we take 4 or 5 years, then many of these kids are going to be in high school, maybe even graduated. And so there's always that balance between doing what's best maybe for the institution, doing what's best for the students. So I believe the 1 year, it's a definite improvement over where we are now. This is a recognition that moving to this new assessment will require that transition. But I don't think that 3 years is appropriate, given that we can't ask these students to wait 3 years to put their life, their education on hold. We've got to continue to move on. And so I believe what we've done in this bill is we've provided the necessary flexibility to our local school boards. We've removed any penalties so that it's not going to be punitive in nature. But, you know, then we need to get on with it.
Follow up. Thank you for that response. And I wanted to give you a special shout-out, Chair, I guess both of our chairs, for listening and providing language in this bill that I think addresses a problem that I saw coming with this transition, which was the problems related to local assessments. I spent a lot of time on this committee talking about hard-to-measure assessments like performing arts, art, band, drama, but also, shop, these other sort of physical, harder-to-measure assessments. I think we have language in here that seems exciting to me. I was hoping you could flush this out a little bit. So on line 874, we've freed up in the development of local assessments we freed up districts to work to acquire teacher-selected or principal-selected assessments, and there's some language in here that says this won't apply to English language arts, mathematics, science, and social studies. I just wanted to be clear, what's the intent here in terms of which courses will be covered? Who's going to have access to this new ability to work on teacher-selected or principal-selected assessments in the local assessment process?
You're recognized.
So basically, those classes that do not have a statewide standardized assessments or does not have an end-of-course assessment, I believe any of those would be eligible for that local school board, that school district, to determine that we'll use this other assessment.
Okay. One final follow-up?
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Recognize.
Chair Atkins, if I can point you to line 450. What it says here is that for purposes of determining grade 3 retention pursuant to a bunch of statutes and high school graduation, statewide standardized assessments shall be linked to the 2013-14 student performance expectations. So I think what this is addressing is the third grade student retention issue. As students are taking this new assessment that's based on new standards, mm-hmm. We're doing something here. Can you help us understand what that is?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when we move to the new assessment, there needs to be that linkage, that connection, if you will, a calibration between the scores on the new assessment to the scores on the former assessment. And so this language allows that linkage to occur. Now, you may say that, well, it doesn't have very much specificity. It just says link. And you're right. That's intentional. It's intentional so that it will be linked, but it will be linked with common sense and a certain level of good judgment as we're trying to determine from the new assessment that we're using to the old assessment which of these students truly need to be retained. It's not an automatic. If we were to clearly define this, then we may have some unintended consequences. Some children may be erroneously retained when perhaps they really shouldn't be. So this is a little... it's written so that there's that flexibility.
Okay. Representative Fullwood, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of questions related to some concerns. And first, I want to thank Chair Atkins, my delegation member. I will say that she has been great at reaching out to all the committee members and asking for input, so we really appreciate that. A couple of my concerns are related to issues that those of us in the Black Caucus are very passionate about, and that's overall we felt like the school grading system has had a disproportionate negative effect on minority communities and poor communities in general. I want to talk about the participation versus performance issue, and I'm all for simplifying this process, the grading process, because I mean, I remember when I first got on the Ed Committee, we got a spreadsheet that showed the process, and it almost blew my mind. So I'm all for simplifying it, but there's some concern from school districts and many of our caucus members that this will discourage minority students from taking AP exams and getting IB programs, et cetera. We can sort of talk about everybody should be on the same playing field. Well, what I would say to that, that's how things should be, but the reality of the way things are is like many of our students are starting from a different position than other students are who've been in different school systems. So a lot of times we need to encourage them to participate, and that's on a high school level particularly. We think that that's very valuable. And so my question is, out of all that, is would you be willing, and Chair O'Toole and whomever else, reach out to the Department of Ed as well, to sit down with some of us and talk about some potential changes between now and when this bill hits the floor? I don't know where it's going from here. But, I mean, we're really concerned, and we've talked about it as a group, small groups, about how we can somehow affect this. Because, again, we think this bill moves us in the right direction, but we would love to maybe sit down and talk about the participation issue and how these grades have a effect on our communities. Because we know that most of the failing schools or struggling schools come from poor neighborhoods. So how do we put more resources into those schools versus penalizing those schools for struggling?
I think the question I heard out of all that was, will Janet sit down with you and other members of your caucus and continue to work on this bill? Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. You're recognized, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the short answer to that is yes, absolutely. The longer answer that I will tell you is that education is the great equalizer. I think we all know that. But we also know that life is not fair. My dad told me that when I was just a little girl. He's like, Janet, life's not fair. There's nothing I can do about it. Get over it. And so I recognize that life's not fair to a lot of students, and they do come to school that first day, and they're not as advanced as maybe some of the other kids. And so I think it's important that we, in education, we open that door of opportunity for those students that maybe otherwise don't see that. They don't see themselves as being able to accomplish, you know, something that's higher up. So I'm absolutely committed to working with you so that we can open those doors, open their eyes, change their paradigm so they can see that, yes, they can become something more than maybe what they've grown up in. So absolutely. That's my long answer.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing no questions, we have appearance cards. Ashley Spicola. Excuse me. Thank you. Waves in support. Vern Crawford, Legislative Liaison, Palm Beach School Board. Welcome, sir. Be sure to put your mic on, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. On behalf of the Palm Beach School District and some other districts, we really do want to second, third, fourth, and fifth the collaborative effort that Chair Atkins has had on this legislation and the help from her staff. We have attended meetings that she has had ad infinitum, it seemed like, getting input from superintendents, from other stakeholders, and this bill, we believe, largely reflects that. The issue that we have really is more of a global at a 50,000-foot level, if you will, because I know some of the questions that have been raised are our concern still, the participation issue, trying to make sure that we're all together with the end-of-course exam aspect of it. We hope that as this bill passes the House, that the House Education Appropriations Committee will help fund segments of it, such as the technology piece that's necessary for implementation. But please keep in mind that the engine that is driving this whole thing is still state assessment. And you have a series of pieces that are dependent very much on that. We have gone from FCAT to FCAT with a new cut score to FCAT 2.0 to we don't know for next year. And as you try to deal with logical and, more importantly, fair, consistent, valid interpretation of student results, of teacher evaluation, it's important that we try to have that consistency as time goes on. But as that state assessment piece changes, so will the implementation on technology, so does the implementation on professional development. Earlier this morning, we talked about instructional materials. The department has got this process of trying to make sure that what is state adopted is properly aligned, and as Florida standards change, some of those are new standards, so they need to come into fold too. We have issues, obviously, on, as I said, professional development, but as you move into school grades, that then dictates where we are as far as with teacher evaluation and performance pay plans. That performance pay plan, the teacher evaluation, is sort of at the end of the train, and it's important that, especially, that we get this right the first time. This is one reason why we are looking for a transition, and the bill does provide greater flexibility than the Senate version, which we're pleased to say, but there's not really much of any room for an oops or an OMG moment, and for those of us who have followed the state board, unfortunately, we have seen that occur in prior years, and we hope we can learn from that. But we would ask you, please, to give this due deliberation. We do thank your help for this legislation, certainly that of Representative Atkins, and we hope that on some of these pieces, which are, comparatively speaking, either just technical or otherwise, that we can turn this into a bill that's fully supported by all stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Adam Geary from the Florida Chamber of Commerce. Wave in support. Kathy Hedbert from, the Department of Education.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Department of Education waves
their time to support. Thank you. Next, we have Sarah Clements from the Foundation for Florida's Future.
Wave our time to support.
Okay. And John Wynn, representing himself as a private citizen. Please come forward, sir. I know who you are. We all know who you are. You scare us every time you
Thank
come
you.
In with your knowledge.
Is this working?
Yes, sir, it is.
Thank
working.
You. It,
at risk of wearing out my welcome, I
never happened.
decided to just share a couple of thoughts, and some of you have already heard this, so I apologize if I'm being redundant. I, too, am still concerned about putting emphasis on the lowest 25% of our most struggling students. I appreciate the what I call the grand bargain, which is we'll eliminate penalties on one side but also eliminate bonuses on the other, which I happen to believe, as I've said, that participation is also a bonus. So I understand that you may not want to put a penalty in for schools who that do not have a sufficient number of its lowest and most struggling students achieving learning gains. I just would like to say that with this penalty in place, Florida over the last 8 years has ranked third, fourth, and fourth again in minority improvement on the NAEP National Assessment Test. And I believe that's because this legislature and the state board has put an emphasis on students focusing and providing additional interventions and assistance to our most struggling students. So I'd like to suggest that Representative Atkins and the committee consider a different approach to that. Why don't we have the Commissioner of Education report to the legislature the progress of each school on their learning gains, particularly focusing on the lowest 25%, but also focusing on students from proficient to advanced, beyond some sort of measure to ensure that schools, regardless of their grade, school districts are requiring interventions to their schools that just aren't doing enough for our most struggling students. And I know when a school gets an A, everybody says, tends to say, particularly parents, everything is fine at the school. But we have found that in many A schools, everything is not fine when it comes to their most struggling students. So I suggest there may be a different way to do something to keep that emphasis on our lowest performing schools, and would ask the committee to consider that. With regard to transition, I would just like to reiterate from last week, that we have been, Florida has been working towards new assessments and new standards since 2010. In 2010, the date of 2015 was announced when the new assessments would be ready, and so we've had 5 years to work on that transition. What this legislation does, I think appropriately, is when it's focusing on the school grade transition. Now, that's different from transitioning to the new assessments. That's been in progress already. But when you're focusing on the school grading transition, I believe this bill rightly provides somewhat of an easy transition for 1 year, not unduly penalizing schools in the first year in which the new accountability provisions are taking place. As to participation, Florida has, of course, excelled in advanced placement performance and participation, and I believe that the system that this legislature passed in 2000 that provides for every child, every 10th grader in the state of Florida, to take the PSAT for free. The College Board provides a list of students who they believe have a 50-50 chance of scoring a qualifying score on an AP exam. They recommend that schools give these students a chance. We're not yet at that many students that the College Board recommends. So if schools just follow the plan that's been enacted and the recommendations of the College Board, an independent third party, I think we meet the requirement for participation, we meet the requirement for equity in participation, and one thing we've learned since 2001, and that with regard to advanced placement, is that you need to have more kids take an advanced placement if you expect your performance to go up. So I believe that there are already incentives outside the school grading formula to keep that participation up, especially among struggling students who may not see themselves as confident in taking an advanced course. And I think schools and school districts have done a remarkable job at changing the school culture from one of exclusivity, where we used to have 1 or 2% of our students take an advanced placement, to one of inclusivity, where we're reaching out to students and saying, we think you could benefit from these courses. So with that, I'll close and appreciate your attention.
Thank you very much. Members, we're going to go into debate, but let me remind you, we have to be on the floor at 3 o'clock, and we have three other members waiting to have their bills heard. So I'd ask that you put your debate into a concise, quick, so that we can get all the way through and all bills can be heard. With that, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Stafford, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And you're welcome.
Thank you, Chair Atkins. I'm just going to summarize. I won't be very long, but I'm going to echo some of what my colleague, Representative Fullwood, has indicated already. And I believe that this bill does not provide significant reform, and I say that because I think it does not move the accountability system in that it continues basically the status quo, in my opinion, under a cloak. I think we have a school grading system that hurts our toughest schools. It hurts our toughest schools, and a recognition formula that sanctions our toughest schools. And I think we should be helping those who need the help the most. Under the current system, A schools get the most money. Well, I believe that the money should follow the need. We should help those who have the most need be successful and come up. I believe within the school grading system in and of itself, we are, I heard recently, it was phrased this way, and I'll wrap up, Madam Chair.
That's fine.
We're perpetuating a system that is innately inequitable, because it's our minority urban schools that are suffering and having a disproportionate impact under the current system. Today we're being asked to vote on an accountability system that's based largely in part on a test that we don't even know what that test will be yet. And that's very problematic. The participation issue is a concern. Converting from the point system to the percentage system may have some negative impacts on minority schools. So you and I talked briefly about it on the floor about slowing it down. And I understand that, you know, we have to, you're saying we have to move it on. But I think this is too much, too soon, too fast. And when you move too fast, you make mistakes. So at this point, I won't be able to support the bill. And thank you for agreeing to work with us and sit with us and listen to our concerns as we move forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Danish, did I see your hand?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess
you're
welcome. I'm going to be kind of echoing this, so I'll keep it very brief. I know we talked, Representative, and I appreciate your work you've done on this bill, and your staff has worked on this bill really hard. And I'm kind of echoing it. I'm in support of the bill with some hesitation, only because I feel that as we move forward, we have to have a little more discussion. I'm going to join with a group of us that want to spend some time with you and see if we can improve this bill, so by the time it gets to the floor, we can at least solve some of the issues with it and move forward and find some of the underlying issues that may be there with the bill to make sure we don't have any unforeseen consequences from this. So hopefully we can meet and get this taken care of before it finishes up. Thank you.
Ranking Member Reed, you're recognized. You're recognized. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am, Madam Chair. Representative Atkins, thank you for this bill. I know that I was supposed to be working with you, but due to circumstances beyond my control, I was unable to do that. And to see you turn this bill around quickly and get it back to us, I wanted to thank you for that. I also want to thank you for agreeing to work with the ones that still have questions and to see if we can work those out and get those answered. I think you've done a great job. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bileka, you're recognized.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I am supportive of this bill and do appreciate all the work that has gone into this bill. I mean, I think we're all in agreement that this is really a back-to-basics type of approach to get our grading formula streamlined and really measure what it was intended to measure. Are our kids learning? it's fair, it's transparent, and I think when you look over the years on what the grading formula has accumulated, every single thing that is not included here is a good thing in and of itself, but when you put 4, 5, 6 extra measures and some gotchas in there as well, there's the unintended consequences that has become so complicated it loses its meaning. To my colleagues talking about what are we doing in failing schools or schools that are underperforming and the challenges in those schools, I think we have to separate the two discussions. One is, does this more accurately reflect, are our kids learning in those underperforming schools? And I think that answer is absolutely yes. I think the second question, which isn't in purview of this bill, is, well, what do we do then? Because if we do the same things, given the set of challenges, those same approaches are not working as effectively in these underperforming schools. But I think if you separate the discussion, are we getting a better read on are our kids learning in there, no pun intended, on that? Yes. Now, with that better understanding of our kids' learning, do we now have a better tool and more transparency on what we can do to improve that? I think that is a very worthwhile policy discussion and approach discussion. I appreciate all the work that staff and the chairwoman has put into this into this bill and taking in all the various feedback and input.
Thank you. Representative, seeing no other debate? Oh. You've got to raise it high. You do this little wave. I think you're just waving it. Representative Torres, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Atkins, I'm going to be up on this bill, but I have concerns, and I've had contacts with some stakeholders who want to reach out to you, especially from the school district and the teachers. It's moving in the right direction, but there needs to be more work done it to make it better. And with that said, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Anybody else waving at me? Nobody? Representative Atkins, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for asking me to run this proposed committee bill. I want to thank the staff, Marlene, Adam, Kathy, everybody who has helped contribute to this product. Truly, this has been a collaborative effort, and I appreciate everyone's effort on this. I want to thank Representative McBurney and Representative Reed Saunders, Representative Fullwood, Representative Danish. Each of you came to me with questions, with issues. And I thank you for that, because with each question, with each concern that's raised, we make it a better bill. This bill is not a comprehensive bill. No bill is ever completely comprehensive, as Representative Beleko was saying. This bill is intended to get us through this transition point of moving to a new assessment, making sure that our school districts have the much-needed flexibility to get through this next year. And then to bring greater clarity as to what our school grades truly mean. And so if you can't measure it, then you can't really determine if you're making progress in fixing what's broken. Clearly, we need to make progress in fixing the broken pieces. But this bill is not focused on that. It's focused on clearly measuring. And so the question I ask each of you to ask yourselves is, does the elements in this bill, does it accurately grade, does it accurately measure how our students and how our schools are performing? And the answer to that is either yes or no. Whether we're doing enough on the other side is another debate. It's another bill. It's an appropriations issue. But the question here before you today is, do the elements in the school grade, as we're looking at them, in this bill, do they accurately reflect student performance and school performance? And if the answer to that question is yes, then I ask for your favorable vote. If the answer to that question in your mind is no, then I ask you to continue to work with me so that we can continue to collaborate together to get to that point. Thank you so much, and I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. And I think if there's one thing this committee can pride itself on is we have had nothing but teamwork. This is year two. Her door is open, my door is open, the staff door is open. If there's questions or issues, by all means, bring them forward. so that we can do the right thing for the ultimate goal, kids. That's what this all turns out to be. I mean, I'm happy for teachers and all the rest, but this is all about the children. And so if you have questions, please be sure to do that. And please take the roll.
Chair O'Toole?
Yes.
Representative Atkins?
Yes.
Beleka?
Yes.
Coley?
Yes.
Danish?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Forward?
Yes.
Hudson?
Yes.
McBurney?
Yes.
Nunez?
Yes.
Perry?
Yes.
Peters?
Yes.
Porter?
Yes.
Reed? Saunders?
Yes.
Stafford?
No.
Torres?
Yes.
Zimmerman?
Yes.
The bill passes.
By your vote, the report, the House CSB, I'm going to choke right in front of everybody and die. PCB 1402 will be reported favorably. Representative Spano, you are recognized to come up and tell us about, you have some amendments, CSHB 433, and I believe you have amendments. Would you cover those first?
Yes. Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. The amendment modifies requirements for instructional personnel supervising pre-service field courses or internships offered on military bases overseas, and essentially provides a framework for which makes it a little bit easier for folks that are trying to get certification to teach kind of a little bit in advance before they get to the state of Florida, that we want to give them that opportunity to do that, whether they're in a different state or whether they're in a military base in Germany trying to prepare, maybe a spouse of a service member trying to prepare to be able to teach once they get to the state of Florida. That's the purpose of the amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Are there questions on the amendment? Amendment one. Yes, Representative Danish, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've gotten a little bit confused looking at this particular amendment, and I want to make sure I get clarified on that. I was looking at it, and are we referring in this to the supervisor showing adequate learning growth or the intern?
You're recognized.
First of all, Madam Chair, can I make a clarification? I did not explain amendment number one.
You did not.
And so if I may backtrack, and I'd be happy to answer that question when we get to that amendment, but unfortunately that is not amendment number one. May I explain amendment
yes,
number
you may.
One? I apologize, Representative Danish. I'll take as long as you want to answer that question when we get there. And I apologize for the confusion. Amendment number one basically simply puts back into existing statute the language in which a candidate demonstrates his or her impact on student learning growth. Yeah. We wanted to maintain the clear description of these teacher internship programs as ones in which candidates can demonstrate a positive impact on student development. And so it was considered by staff in the department afterward that this language probably does need to be in there. So we put it back in the bill, which keeps it in existing statute.
All right, everyone's clear on Amendment 1. Are there any questions on Amendment 1? Any appearance cards on Amendment 1? Any debate on Amendment 1? Seeing no debate, you are free to close on the amendment.
Wave close, thank you.
All in favor say aye. All opposed say nay. You are now on Amendment 2. And that is number 119395.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment number two is the basically exact same provision, placing that language back into a different section of the bill.
Okay. Are there any questions on that amendment? Is there any appearance cards on the amendment? Is there debate on the amendment? Representative, you are recognized to close on Amendment 2.
Wave close, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All in favor, say aye. Aye. All opposed, say nay. We are now on Amendment 3, which is number 911547. You are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Amendment number 3, members, adds the same language into a new provision which is in the bill relating to internship programs out of state, but simply adds that same exact identical language to that new provision.
Questions on the amendment? Representative Danish, is this the one you had questions on?
No.
He answered your question?
Yeah.
All right, everyone's good? Are there any questions on this amendment? Seeing no questions, are there any appearance cards? Is there debate? Seeing no debate, Representative, you're recognized to close on amendment number 3.
Wave close, Madam Chair.
All in favor say yea.
Yea.
All opposed say nay. All right. Amendment number 4, 514-905. You're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is the amendment that I, in error, explained earlier. Essentially, putting into place an opportunity for pre-service training programs on military bases overseas.
Thank you. Are there any questions on this amendment? Any appearance cards on the amendment? Any debate on the amendment? Representative, you're recognized to close on amendment number 4.
Waive close, Madam Chair.
All in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed say nay. Amendment number 5, 569-255. You're recognized to explain it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a purely grammatical technical correction and adds the word the.
I like that word.
Are there any questions on the amendment? Representative Zimmerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I don't see the word the.
It removes the word
the. Removes the word. I apologize. My apologies. It removes the word. Thank you for that clarification.
Maybe we're just going a little too fast.
That's what it is.
And I think that's probably me looking at the clock. All right. So that was the question. Any appearance cards on the amendment? Any debate? Representative, you are recognized to close about removing the word the.
Yes. Waive close, Madam Chair.
All in favor say aye.
Yay.
All opposed say nay. Amendment number 6. 490-431, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And amendment number 6 also is technical in nature, and it removes the word developed.
Are there any questions on the amendment? Are there any appearance cards on the amendment? Any debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All in favor say, we did that. All in favor say yay. Or do you have to call the roll? No, we don't have to do that in last. You are back on the bill as amended by 6 amendments.
You need to vote on this amendment. You need to call your voice.
That's what I just asked, and she said, no, we need to call a voice on amendment 6. Oh, I said yay, nay, no? All in favor, amendment number 6, say yay.
Yay.
All right. Nay, say nay. No. Okay, dokie. We are back on the bill as amended by 6 amendments. You are free to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. After that, I hope I've got enough energy to do it. But this bill, members, is one you've seen. It's been through the K-12 subcommittee and also the Education Appropriation Committee, subcommittee. So many of you have seen this bill. But just very quickly, it allows candidates seeking educator certification to demonstrate mastery of general knowledge by achieving passing scores on an assessment such as the GRE, which tests verbal, analytical, quantitative reasoning skills. It repeals a provision requiring DOE to conduct a longitudinal study, as that study has now been completed. It actually repeals an obsolete reference to the class examination, which is no longer given. It requires rules relating to certificate renewal and reinstatement to allow certain teachers to bank excess college credits or in-service points earned in the area of teaching students with disabilities toward future certification renewals. Modifies existing requirements for instructional personnel who supervise pre-service field experience courses or internships to take into consideration courses offered in other states through Florida online or distance programs. And then finally clarifies that a candidate for certification may demonstrate subject area knowledge by passing a Florida-developed subject area examination or an analogous standardized examination specified in state board rule. That is the bill. Madam Chairman.
Any questions on the bill? Appearance cards. We have 2. Ashley Spicola from the Office of the Governor. Waves and support. Tanya Cooper from DOE. Waves and support. Is there debate on the bill? Representative Coley, you're recognized.
Thank you. Great bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Bilecka?
Again, a terrific bill. I want to commend the bill sponsor for putting this together. Other than the parent, everyone knows the teacher is the most impactful person in a student's education. And when you look at teacher certification and which teachers are excellent teachers, oftentimes in the upper grades, middle grades, upper grades, the biggest determinant on how well a teacher is going to do is their mastery of a subject area and their passion for a subject area. The rest of the stuff can be developed and can come into play, but that mastery and that passion really trump everything else, and I applaud this attempt and some parts of this bill that looks at expertise as well as competency by passing the exam.
Any other debate on the bill? Seeing no other debate, you are free to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just very quickly, we've taken great strides over the last several years, long before I was ever here, to continue to ensure that we get the best teachers in the classroom and to make it possible for them to do that in the easiest way, not to water down requirements, but to make it easier for them to kind of facilitate that process. This bill begins, or it actually continues in that vein, toward that end, to make our schools the schools that are an environment where our students have the best possible teachers in the entire country, and in fact, the world. And that's what this bill does, and I appreciate your hearing it today, and thank you for your support, members.
Ian, please call the bill. Call the roll.
Chair O'Toole?
Yes.
Representative Atkins?
Yes.
Lecca?
Yes.
Coley?
Yes.
Danish?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Forward?
Yes.
Hudson? McBurney?
Yes.
Nunez?
Yes.
Perry?
Yes.
Peters?
Yes.
Porter?
Yes.
Reed?
Yes.
Saunders?
Yes.
Stafford?
Yes.
Torres?
Yes.
Zimmerman?
Yes.
The bill passes.
By your vote, it will be reported favorably.
Thank you, members, Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Diaz, I think you have asked for a moment of privilege.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you for this moment of personal privilege. I'd like to introduce some high school students we have from South Florida. First, from the Somerset Chapel Trail in Pembroke Pines. If you guys would please stand, welcome to the Florida House. And from my home district, District 103, from the Hialeah Educational Academy in Hialeah, Florida, please stand up. Welcome to the Florida House.
Thank you very much, and welcome. We now have two bills left. We are going to go on to CS for HB 533. And we are going to bring up Representative Diaz. You can either come up or sit down. I think he picked on coming up. It is hard to do it there. You're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. HB 533 is a bill related to student eligibility for interscholastic athletic competition. The main points of the bill has to do with the physical examination that athletes are required to take before participating in interscholastic athletics. And the main thrust behind that is there have been several incidents in which student athletes have either passed away or collapsed and had brain damage or other issues physically due to undetected cardiac issues that were not detected during their regular physical screening. Now, I want to be clear that the current physical examination form does note at the bottom that they do recommend an EKG, an electrocardiogram. What this bill does is it requires the FHSAA to disseminate a brochure that's going to be produced by the cardiology teams of our freestanding children's hospitals, providing the parents with in-depth information on the dangers of these cardiac issues and how it can affect their student athlete. And so just falling short of mandating it, because in some areas of the state, they may not have access to a free EKG. In Miami-Dade, we do have, thanks to Miami Children's Hospital, we hope that with this move, we will encourage more parents to take advantage of that. I would like to continue working, if the bill passes and becomes law, to monitor this and make sure that we can continue to ask parents to be vigilant of this, and at some point, maybe we can have 100% participation. The bill also addresses, and this was an amendment by Representative Saunders in our last committee stops, it's a bipartisan bill. It addresses participation for students at schools that do not have a particular sports program or activity. So it includes not only sports, but also band, drama, arts. And what it states is if the school they are at does not have the program, the students are eligible to participate at another school within their district. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Questions on the bill? Representative Fullwood, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Overall, I think it's a great bill. I just have a question on the second part of the bill as it relates to participation in sports. I know the bill allows kids from charter schools or homeschooling to go to any school in that school district. Any thought? I mean, we've had a lot of bills here related to where coaches and other folks were concerned about recruiting. Or you know, unnecessary or illegal recruiting. Any thought to requiring a student to go to a school within that region or within, I don't know what schools call them, but region, I know districts are broken down into various regions. So any thought to requiring students to go to a school that has a athletic or arts program within that region of their home or the school itself?
You're recognized.
Well, with the first of all, to address the recruiting concern that I know has been brought up, this doesn't change the bylaws or the rules of FHWA for recruiting. If you are a homeschool student and you decide to participate at a school that has a particular program, that's where you become eligible, and at that point, the rules apply to you there. So
okay.
You cannot be, you can't just decide you're going to move from school to school. Second part is you can't be at Miami Northwestern High School your freshman year and after being in public schools your entire career, and then all of a sudden decide that you're going to be a homeschool student your sophomore year so you could play at Miami Central.
Okay.
So those are all addressed in current bylaws. The issue with the homeschool zone, the reason for this is because of all the changes we've had. Schools, you know, when we went to school, you went to school where you belonged, and that's the attendance zone. So much open enrollment, so many magnet programs, so many of those schools have come across, are open across districts, both traditional public schools and charters and academies, that this bill really allows for participation. And it's a rare case where you have a school that doesn't have a program. So this is a small number of students. We want to make sure they have access to the programs, and we want to make sure that it's practical for the parents, because the parents are responsible solely for transportation. School systems are not going to provide that. So we want to make sure that it's feasible, and we don't want to cut them off by making it unreasonable.
Representative Coley, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in several places, this is on the same line of questioning, I guess, where you've got, and I had my place and turned the page and lost it, sorry, where they can participate in a school district in which he resides or a public school in another school district which the student could choose to attend pursuant to an inter-district controlled open enrollment policy. So help me understand, they can't just look around and say, I want to go to this county. There has to be in place an inter-district policy. Is that correct?
Madam Chair,
recognize?
That is correct. Within the county, it's obviously whatever school is available. These cases where there's an inter-district agreement are very specific. It would have to be one county that has an existing agreement with the other. They're very rare, and so it only pertains to that specific case.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Zimmerman, you recognize?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question's been answered.
Thank you. Any other questions? We have one appearance card, Lainey Farrow, Director.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Miami Children's Hospital Waves and Support.
Waves and Support. Thank you. All right. Is there any debate on the bill? Any debate? Representative Saunders?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And you all may have noticed that I am the primary co-sponsor on this bill. I wanted to thank Representative Diaz for working with me on it. The amendment that really changed this bill, but quite a bit, came from an idea that Representative Hudson and I workshopped last year, and we moved that bill through every committee. It's changed a little. It's not exactly the same, but the concept that we worked on last year and that Representative Diaz has so graciously allowed in this bill is that it's funny. We had a mind meld. He came at it from athletics. I came at it from performing and fine arts. But the intent here is that a mind meld, Wilkins. If you're not getting it, okay, whatever. for me, if you're at a charter school or you're in a virtual program and that that small school that maybe serves a really unique need doesn't offer a drama club, it shouldn't mean that you can't do drama. And I think this opens that up. It opens up all kinds of academic opportunities and extracurricular environments that we all agree are really valuable. So I'm glad and proud to co-sponsor this. And I think we've tried very hard to deal with the recruiting issue to the degree that we could. So I'm certainly open to any other suggestions we have on how to make sure we're not doing something unintentional. I would suggest that Representative Diaz is as well. But thank you all for your support.
Representative Pelleca, you're recognized.
Yeah, I'm grateful that Representative Diaz has brought this bill up because it seems like each week when I'm in committees, if I don't hear two or three education bills from Representative Diaz, it wasn't a fulfilling week. And just wondering if he does any bills that aren't education because you've now made my week because I will finish
Why
it with
would
another
he?
Education bill.
You don't have to answer that.
If it's not broken, don't fix
don't,
it.
There you go. Any other debate on the bill? Seeing no further debate, you are recognized, Representative Diaz, to close on your bill.
Madam Chair, I'll waive my close.
And please call the roll.
Chair O'Toole.
Yes.
Representative Atkins.
Yes.
Valleca.
Yes.
Coley.
Yes.
Danish.
Yes.
Diaz.
Yes.
Forward.
Yes.
Hudson. McBurney.
Yes.
Nunez.
Yes.
Perry.
Yes.
Peters.
Yes.
Porter.
Yes.
Reed.
Yes.
Saunders.
Yes.
Stafford. Torres,
yes.
Zimmerman.
Yes.
The bill passes.
By your vote, CSHB 533 will be reported favorably. The next bill, Representative Pelleca, you'll be happy to know, is CSHB 707. Yes, Representative Diaz, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to make sure that Representative Pelleca's day was made. So. House Bill 707 reorganizes language relating to background screening for personnel and contractors who have direct contact with students or access to school campuses. It allows for screening results for virtual instruction program personnel to be shared among districts, reducing the cost of repeated background screening since virtual instruction goes across county lines all over the state. The CS adds several crimes to the list of qualifying or disqualifying criminal offenses against personnel with direct student contact, and the CS requires FDLE to enroll background screening fingerprints in the National Retained Print Arrest Notification Program once the program is operational. The program will be operational later this year. The CS requires FDLE to notify a school district whenever an arrest record is identified with the retained fingerprints of a district employee or contractor, either by FDLE or FBI through the national program. And participation in the National Retained Arrest Print Notification Program eliminates the need to undergo a federal background check every 5 years. There is a potential cost savings measure. A one-time fee for enrollment in the national program is $13, whereas the fee for the federal check every 5 years is $16.50. That is the bill, Madam Chair.
Do we have any questions on the bill? Do we have any appearance cards? Seeing no appearance card, is there any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I think Representative Pelleca has had enough of me, so I'll waive my close.
I think he looks forward to it, actually. All right. Ann, please call the roll on CSHB 707.
Chair O'Toole.
Yes.
Representative Atkins.
Yes.
Pelleca, Coley,
yes.
Danish,
yes.
Diaz,
yes.
Forward,
yes.
Hudson, McBurney,
yes.
Nunez,
yes.
Perry,
yes.
Peters,
yes.
Porter,
yes.
Reed,
yes.
Saunders,
yes.
Stafford, Torres,
yes.
Zimmerman.
Yes.
The bill passes.
Show that CSH... B 733 passes and will be reported favorably. 707, like the airplane. All right, members, we've gotten through the bills. I just want to talk to you a little bit about what's coming up so that you can start doing your homework and your thoughts, just like you've been all along. Work with the sponsors of these bills so that when we come here, we get the questions clarified and answered and moved on. Next, we will be working on a committee bill to come before us, and we hope to be able to hear the middle grade reform bill, House Bill 7033. So write that down, House Bill 7033. Familiarize yourself with it so that if you have questions during this week, you can bring them to Representative Atkins, and she can be prepared to have those. I don't know what other bills will come before us, but I suspect we should be getting some more. Representative Atkins, you've carried a lot of water this session, and I want to say thank you. You've got a lot left to go, but you've done an excellent job, and I want to thank the committee for the respect that you show to one another and the way that we can work together as a team, because, again, it's all about the kids. And with that, Representative Stafford moves. We rise.